We human beings are born desiring. We are not even aware of it yet. But beyond our need for food and shelter, as newborns, we desire the sound, the smell, the feel of those who love us. We crave contact, warmth, love, though we have not yet learned to identify it as such. And it isn't long before we desire so much more. As the mother of a 20-month-old, I have seen this desire in action. From the first time my son reached out for a toy, to the discovery that he could complete a puzzle, from lifting his head for the first time to pulling himself up using the edge of a table, to crawling forward to grab the cat, to walking, to running, to jumping. He wants so much and always a bit more than he has. When he has finally achieved something, he may feel triumphant for a moment, but then he is back again, wanting more. His desire isn't conscious. He isn't thinking, well, now that I'm almost one, I ought to be taking my first steps. But neither is it simply instinct, purely animalistic and mechanical. Something inside him calls him forward, pushes him forward, pulls him forward. Something I'm not even sure he's aware of leads him ever onward. Watching Alden during his first couple of years has gotten me thinking about the nature of desire and the role it plays in our lives. And I've decided it's a lot more complex than I first thought, particularly once we become aware of our desires and the power they have. Because, of course, desire and the way it compels us to keep moving forward is not something that goes away once we have mastered the basics of life, as if we could even be sure of what those were. This impulse for more, further, better does not disappear when we become adults or when we have completed some particular set of tasks. In fact, studies have shown that we human beings seem to be able to be satisfied only for some very limited period of time before we desire more than we have, even if we have already had everything we have ever wanted. A state of genuine contentment is very hard for most of us to sustain. There are outside pressures, of course, that contribute to this way of being. Our parents, our neighbors, the world at large tells us both directly and indirectly that we should have more, that we should be more. Our culture tends to measure value in terms of material wealth or productivity or job title, and few of us measure up. At the same time, much of the pressure comes from within, from our own sense that we ought to be more than we are. Then what we have, what we do, can never be enough. The same impulse that drives my son to try to run as soon as he can walk and to jump as soon as he can run lives within each one of us and cannot be denied. This message that we are not enough has been painful and damaging enough that the world tries to offer a counterpoint. These days, in many circles, we are encouraged to live in the moment, to accept who we are and what we have, and learn to be content. Certainly, those of us who are materially comfortable would be well served to count our blessings rather than always striving for more. But even apart from that, there is often more talk of self-acceptance than self-improvement. I, for one, often find myself trapped between the part of me that always wants something more, even if I don't know what it is, and the part of me that wants to sit still for a time, be content with what is. With either choice, I feel as if I am failing in some way, either by not making the most of who I am and what I might do, or by pushing so hard that I neglect or devalue what is already there. Not to mention the fact that it can feel awfully difficult to know what would actually make my life more meaningful and fulfilling than it already is. In the end, as with most things, this isn't an either-or proposition. It can't be. Desire is too much a part of our nature for any but the most disciplined of us to truly let it go. At the same time, almost all of us need the opportunity to be still for a bit, to let go of our striving and look around and appreciate what is. How we balance these things is very much an individual matter, determined not only by conscious choice, but also by the mix of environment, upbringing, and innate personality that makes us who we are. Desire burns more or less brightly within people, for reasons we will probably never understand. I think of those who expanded the world by setting out on journeys of great discovery and danger, or those who give up having a personal life in order to devote their time to finding a cure for disease or inventing something that helps move the world forward, or those who spend their time creating beauty, be it music, art, literature, or even displays of great athleticism. All of these people have drive and determination that, frankly, I can't quite imagine. During the recent presidential campaign, Barack Obama was ridiculed for writing in early elementary school that he wanted to be president of the United States. Some said this showed too much ambition, or perhaps too high an opinion of himself. But the seed of who he became was contained in that early desire. Without it, he and we would likely not be where we are. But not all of us have such clear and driving desire. When I was a freshman in college at the University of Rochester, I applied for admission to the Eastman School of Music, where I was already taking trombone lessons and playing in one of the jazz ensembles. My experience that first year had led me to think that I might want to make music performance the center of my life. I was only a little daunted by the fact that the school accepted only 4 trombonists each year. I was not accepted, and as I learned more about the lives of the people who were, I was not surprised. I never had the desire or the discipline to spend 8 hours a day in a practice room or to play the same 4-measure phrase over and over and over again until I could do it perfectly every time. It just wasn't and still isn't who I am. Without those things, I would never be a professional trombonist. I deeply admire those who find a driving passion for their lives, and I wonder what it must be like. I'm glad for those scientists, artists, leaders, athletes, and others whose combination of desire and talent and discipline have blessed our world. I am glad they drove themselves forward in ways most of us never could, and I'm grateful for all the sacrifices that they must have made along the way. At the same time, and on the flip side, I have always envied those people who seem to be genuinely at peace in their lives and who exude that peace as they move through the world. The Dalai Lama is the most prominent example of this. I've heard that simply being in his presence is an extraordinary experience, that his genuineness and compassion and attention to the moment are palpable. And there are other more ordinary people who seem to have a good deal of this, who seem not to worry about perpetually moving forward, but are able to fully appreciate this time, this place, whatever it brings. People like the hedgehog who find a way to live in the moment. I don't know exactly where that peace comes from, only that at this time and place, it does not live within me. All of us lie somewhere on this spectrum between desire and peace. Maybe you are closer to one end than the other, Or perhaps, like me, you reside in the somewhat confused center, feeling pulled first one way, then the other. And at times I even wonder if it's more of a circle than a line, and that those who find in their lives a driving passion also find in the fulfillment of it that peace and contentment that so many of us seek. It's easy and often tempting to believe that there is one right way to be when it comes to the question of desire. But clearly the world needs people all along the spectrum. The world needs people to invent and discover and devote their lives to achievement. It needs people to reflect and contemplate and teach us what it means to find peace within our lives. And it needs the rest of us as well, who muddle along in the middle as best we can. Part of the task of being human is accepting where we fit when it comes to desire, to forgive ourselves for not pushing as hard as many we see around us, or accepting the realities of a life lived in focused pursuit of something, to hear the conflicting messages from inside and out and find our own way through, to know that different stages of our life will bring different levels of desire and different amounts of peace. Perhaps the true challenge is learning that we need not desire to be different than we are. This, of course, is not the last word on desire, because the issue of desire is not only about how much of it we have, but also where we focus it, what the object of our desire is. In the religious world, desire for anything other than the sacred is usually frowned upon. Jesus exhorted his followers to leave behind all worldly possessions, relationships, and ambitions in order to live true to the message of God. Buddhists have a very clear message about desire, teaching that desire is the root of all human suffering, and therefore the journey to enlightenment entails letting go of desire. I've always felt in some ways drawn to Buddhism. I love the centrality of compassion in its message, and the fact that it is focused on behavior rather than belief. And there does seem to be a kind of peace that comes to those who practice Buddhism deeply, a peace that I would love to find in my own life. But in the end, there is something about Buddhism's message about desire that I cannot accept. Not only am I not sure that desire is the source of all human suffering, I also believe more and more these days that desire creates the foundation for much that is good and lasting and beautiful in life. I recently heard a story about the death of the Buddha, which came at the end of a long life spent teaching others how to follow the path of enlightenment that he had found. Surrounded by his most devoted followers, Buddha reached the last hours of his life. His disciples begged him to hold on, not wanting to lose this man who had brought so much peace and love into their lives. He pointed out to them that their wish to keep him around was yet another example of desire causing suffering, and he encouraged them to let go of their desire for his presence and his continued life. I don't know if they were able to comply, but this story illustrates for me one of the problems with the goal of setting aside all desire. For me, the desire to be with those I love, to have them live as long as they can, this is one of the great blessings of life. If this brings suffering, which it often does, then so be it. The suffering that comes from loving well is part of what makes life meaningful. On this issue, I am certainly on the side of the poet who claims it is better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. It is undeniable that desire can lead to suffering, not only for each of us personally, but on a grand scale as well. Part of the problem is that we all too often desire the wrong thing. How much of our current culture is driven by our desire to be rich, to be thin, to be forever young? How often are our desires petty and selfish, aimed not at broadening and deepening life, but at constricting it or shielding it? People and communities and civilizations desire strength and power and territory and wealth. We desire to be right, to be in charge, to be in control, whatever cost there might be for others. We desire a great many things we will never have. And we don't always respond well to disappointment. How damaging that is depends on whether we are 1-year-old with books and row, or an adult with influence over the lives of others, or a country with economic power and military might. I can understand the impulse to try to do away with desire, to claim that the path to happiness and righteousness is through the total denial of it. And yet, as I have already said, desire can also lead us to much that is good, not only for us, but for the world as well. Imagine if those throughout time who have desired justice gave up the fight, or if people somehow stopped seeking beauty and love. The world would be a much poorer place. For me, then, the goal is not to do away with human desire, something I don't even believe is possible, even if that would be best. The goal is to desire those things which are worthy of our efforts, those things which we believe will truly be good for ourselves, for our world. For some small percentage of us, that will be a specific area of achievement, like those I talked about. For most of the rest of us, perhaps we can train ourselves to desire those things of higher value, to reach out for knowledge, for compassion, for justice, and, of course, for love. Not simply because these things will make the world a better place, but because they will make our lives better as well. They are perhaps harder to achieve or know when we have achieved them than something more specific, something more tangible. As Elizabeth Tarbox writes, we cannot compel love, or by ourselves at least, require justice. And not only that, but it can be hard to know from our individual and very limited human perspective whether what we desire truly is on the side of love, of justice. Certainly many wrongs have been done in the name of that which is sacred. And yet, we must live. We must choose. We must trust that if we listen well, both to ourselves and to others, we can find our way. If a great many of us put a great deal of the energy of desire that burns within us into these things, surely that will change our world. I do believe that if we are honest with ourselves, we will know when we are in pursuit of something worthy of our efforts. Perhaps peace comes not from a lack or denial of desire, but rather from desiring those things which are true and lasting and right. Watching my son and thinking about my own life, I have come to believe that our deepest desire is the desire for love. I suspect that many of the desires that ultimately steer us in the wrong direction are merely this desire for love twisted in ways that hurt us and hide what it is we truly need. We turn our desire for love into a desire to be always physically beautiful, always young, thinking this will make us worthy of love. We shift our desire for meaning and purpose into a desire for temporal success and material things that we hope will convince us that our life matters. But we likely know we are off track when we get there, that these things will not give us what we seek, And yet it is all too easy to lose sight of what we truly need. Our challenge is to look beyond the surface of our desires and see what lies beneath. To respond not to our passing fancies, but to the deepest callings of our life. May we find the courage and faith to follow our deepest desires, to use the fire that burns within us in service of those things which matter most, to know that though we cannot force love or justice, we cannot deny our longing for them. May we respond to that longing with openness and hope, and with a commitment to follow our hearts wherever they might lead. May it be so. Amen.